Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivati Kacharya Satyata Sarasri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi ki jai. Namacharya Saharya Sakur ki jai. Premsikom Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Sisi Radha Krishna Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mayapur Navadvip Dham ki jai. Sri Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Go Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sisi Guru and Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai
Advaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhaktavinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai
Advaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhaktavinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai
Advaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhaktavinda. Today we're reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, my dear Leela, chapter 15. Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya offers prasad to the Lord, texts 245 through 261. However, those verses in themselves require like a setup for better understanding and for tuning our sentiments to the message that's included in them. Love of Godhead is compared to an ocean with tides and currents and different features constantly evolving and changing. So this particular part of Chaitanya Charitamrita I found has some core issues which are really basic, which you can just kind of talk about. But when you feather them in and kind of glue them together with other pastimes and other features, then you get more of a feeling for that movement. So I want to do that. And what I want to do is go back in this very pastime to an earlier part of it, to sort of explain what's going on, to set a mood, to help us better understand what's going on between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya. So we'll go back to text 186. What's happening here in our storyline is that the devotees from Bengal have come and spent the 4 months. And now it's the end of Kartik, and they're meeting with, they met with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we've been studying how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu related with each individual devotee, and there were various lessons that were learned. After they left, after all those devotees had left and gone back to Bengal, then Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya figured this was a good opportunity to invite Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home, because the devotees were all gone. When Mahaprabhu was there, it was constantly difficult. It was difficult to get an appointment, difficult to get him to come. So, text 186. One day, Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya came before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with folded hands and submitted a request. Since all the Vaishnavas had returned to Bengal, there was a good chance that the Lord would accept an invitation. Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya said, "Please accept my invitation for lunch for 1 month. Please accept the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "That's not possible." Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya said, "Please accept the invitation for 20 days. When Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya requested Mahaprabhu to accept lunch for 15 days, the Lord said. I shall accept lunch at your place for one day only. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then caught hold of the Lord's lotus feet and submissively begged, please, accept lunch for at least 10 days. In this way, by and by, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reduced the duration to 5 days. Thus, for 5 days, he regularly accepted the Bhattacharya's invitation to lunch, up to 199. Having this arrangement confirmed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Bhattacharya became very glad and immediately invited the Lord to his house on that very day. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's wife was known as Satyaramata, the mother of Sati. She was a great devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and she was affectionate like a mother. After returning to his home, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave orders to his wife, and his wife, Satyaramata, began cooking with great pleasure. At Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, there was always a full stock of food. Whatever spinach, vegetables, fruit, and so on were required, he collected and brought back home. So he went shopping while she started cooking. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya personally began to help Satyaramata cook. She was very experienced and she knew how to cook nicely. On the southern side of the kitchen were two rooms for offering food. And in one of them, the food was offered to Shalagram Narayan. The other room was for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lunch. The Lord's lunch room was very secluded, and it was newly constructed by the Bhattacharya. The room was so constructed there was only one door opening to the outside, which served as an entrance for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was another door attached to the kitchen, and it was through this door that the food was brought. So kind of drilling into this mentality of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he's had an entire room added on, newly constructed, means that he had it special made, custom area, to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meals. Part of it came from the kitchen. If you've been to his house, on the northern side, Gambira, or where Kasi Mishra's house, is south toward the beach of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. It's only like 50 yards. And then the northern side of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, there's a tank called Sweta Ganga, and then a little further, the Jagannath Temple. So this room was constructed on the beach side of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, the southern side. One room went into the kitchen, and one to the outside, and that was the only two rooms, so no one could interrupt Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meal. And he also made arrangements that different sannyasis would come. So Sarvabhauma started with this elaborate facility for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meals. First, text 207. First, three manas of cooked rice, almost 6 pounds, was poured onto a big banana leaf. Then the whole sack of rice was mixed with so much yellowish and fragrant clarified butter, or ghee, that it began to overflow the leaf. There were a number of pots made of the bark of banana trees and the leaves of the kaya plant. These pots were filled with various cooked vegetables and placed on all sides of the leaf. There were about 10 kinds of spinach, a soup called shukta, which is made with the bitter neem leaves, a pungent preparation made with black pepper, a mild cake of fried curd, and buttermilk mixed with fried pieces of dal. There were preparations of dukta tumbi, dukta kushmanda, vesara, lapra, mocha kanta, mocha bhaja, and other vegetables. There were unlimited quantities of vrita kushmanda body, phool body, fruits, and various roots. Other preparations included eggplant mixed with newly grown neem leaves fried together, light body, fried patola, fried rounds of squash, and pumpkin. There was a soup made with fried dird dal and mung dal, the feeding nectar. There were also sweet chutney and 5 or 6 kinds of sour preparations, beginning with badamala. There were badas made of mung dal and urd dal and sweet bananas. There were sweet rice cakes, coconut cakes, and various other cakes. There were kaja bada, dugda chida, dugda glaklaki, and various cakes that I'm unable to describe. Sweet rice mixed with ghee was poured into an earthen pot and mixed with champakala, condensed milk, and mango. In Jagannath Puri, sweet rice is not like our sweet rice. We have sweet rice that's milk, mixed with milk, and we call it sweet rice. They actually have rice that's sweet. In Orissa and Bengal, rice is a common commodity, but there are so many varieties. There's more, it's probably like 100 different varieties of rice, just the different qualities, big, long grain, short grain, brown rice, different ways it's prepared and different ways it's harvested. So this sweet rice, kind of soft, I don't know how they do it, it has some cloves in it, and they also put sugar in it to sweeten it. Other preparations included a very delicious churned curd and a varieties of sandesh sweetness. Indeed, all the various vegetables available in Bengal and Orissa were prepared. Thus, the Bhattacharya prepared a great variety of food and spread a fine white cloth over the white wooden platform. On two sides of the sacks of food were pitchers filled with scented cold water. Flowers of the tulsi tree were placed atop the mound of rice. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also included several types of food that had been offered to Lord Jagannath, and these included sweet balls known as Amrita Gutika, sweet rice, and cakes, and all these were kept separate. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that there are different kinds of Brahmins coming from different castes, even of the Brahmin class. Some of them, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would eat and allow and actually eat their cooking, and some he wouldn't. The ones at whose home he wouldn't eat their cooking, they would buy prasadam from the Lord Jagannath temple and invite the Lord and serve him that. Whereas here with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, there's both kinds of food are there, the ones that he and Satyamata cook and Jagannath prasadam. When everything was ready, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came there alone after finishing his midday duties. If you read also carefully, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's and his associates, every noon, they would always go to the beach and take bath and say Gayatri, do that. He knew the heart. Oh, that's so beautiful. He knew the heart of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. This is part of why I'm doing this. Because Sarvabhauma is putting so much love and devotion into what's developing. After Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya washed the Lord's feet, the Lord entered the room to take his lunch. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little astonished to see the gorgeous arrangements and gesturing. He spoke to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Oh, this is most uncommon. How was this arrangement of rice and vegetables finished in 6 hours? Even 100 men cooking on 100 stoves could not possibly finish all these preparations within so short a time. I hope the food's already been offered to Krishna, since I see that there are tulsi flowers upon it. You are most fortunate, and your endeavor is successful, for you have offered such wonderful food to Radha and Krishna. Oh, the color of this rice is so attractive, and its aroma so good that it appears Radha and Krishna have directly taken it. My dear Bhattacharya, your fortune is very great. How much shall I praise you? I am also very fortunate to be able to take the remnants of this food. Take away Krishna's sitting place and put it aside, then give me Mahaprasad on a different plate. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, it is not so wonderful, my lord. Everything has been made possible by the energy of mercy of him who will eat it. My wife and I did not especially exert ourselves in the cooking. He by whose power the food has been prepared knows everything. Now please sit down at this place and take your lunch. Both the food and the sitting place are the Lord's mercy. If you can eat the remnants of the food, what is the offense in your sitting in this place? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, yes, you have spoken correctly. The Shastras enjoin that the devotee can partake of everything left by Krishna. Oh, yeah? No, I didn't. think it, what happens is in the, all of the database, the second response to a lot of the devotees in the conversation is listed as purple, and I just cut and pasted it. But anyway, the Lord now quotes Srimad Bhagavatam 11.6.46, which is Uddhava speaking to Lord Krishna. My dear Lord, the garlands, scented substances, garments, ornaments, and other such things that have been offered to you may later be used by your servants. By partaking of these things and eating the remnants of food you have left, we will be able to conquer the illusory energy. If I was to say the theme of where we're headed, the theme of today's discussion, it's how to motivate one another to develop and experience and share love of Krishna. So what's happening here is that the Vedic culture is so wonderful that the exchange of serving someone prasada, inviting them to the home or even to someone else, and partaking of prasadam together is so elevating. It's so wonderful. It's remnants of food offered to Krishna. There's a spiritual element. It's not just mundane eating. And in this way, that part of the Kunta Punkte Bhoja Te Chaiva, Chatur Vidhasi Bhagavat Prasada, Sarvana Tripana Haribhakta Sama. And the spiritual master is very pleased when he sees the devotees gathered together and take this prasadam. So this whole arrangement is flowing now. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Satyamata start to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, there's so much food here, it's impossible to eat it all. Sarvabhauma replied, I know how much you can eat. After all, at Jagannath Puri, you eat 52 times a day. And each time you eat hundreds of buckets filled with prasadam. At Dwarka, you keep 16,000 queens in 16,000 palaces. Also, there are 18 mothers and numerous friends and relatives of the Yadu dynasty. In Vrindavan, you have your father's elder brothers, your father's younger brothers, maternal uncles, husbands of your father's sisters, and many cowherd men. There are also many cowherd boyfriends, and you eat twice a day, morning and evening, in the house of each and every one of them. Indeed, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued. At Govardhan Puja ceremony, you ate sacks of rice. In comparison to that, this small quantity is not even a morsel of food. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas I am a most insignificant living being. Therefore, please, accept this little quantity of food from my home. Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled and sat down to eat. The Bhattacharya, with great pleasure, first offered him the prasadam from the Jagannath temple. And now we're on text. Where was I supposed to start? 245? Yes. Yeah, sure.
This text.
Do you want to give him a microphone?
Like Vikaswami, just 3 days ago, he wrote me about this text, and he said,
which text?
The one we're going to read right now. This text.
The first one, we're going to start with 245?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he said there's a little error here in the way it was edited.
Huh.
If I could just, so what it should, what it should say, what it should say, Amoga, no, this is, I'm sorry, I skipped. At this time, the Bhattacharya's son-in-law, Amoga, who was the husband of his daughter Shati, arrived. Although born in an aristocratic Brahmin family, Amoga was a great fault finder and blasphemer. That's not yep. That he, that at this time he had a.
Okay.
Amoga right.
There's another edit also, which is not proper. I don't know how it was done, but living in Puri. There are not 52 different offerings to Lord Jagannath every day. The temple activities and daily puja is very well documented and very public. It's more or less like ours, so the Mangal Arati, then a morning offering, then early morning offering, an afternoon offering, an evening offering. Evening offering and then late at night they offer coconuts. But they have a special thing called chotobola. That's 56 different types of food, which are cooked regularly. And then also there are different days and different times when also other things are added. So text 245, let's read in Bengali together. Hena kale amoga bata charina damata kulina nindaka teno sati karyara bata. At this time, Bhattacharya had a son-in-law named Amoga, who was thus the husband of his daughter named Sati. Although born in an aristocratic Brahmin family, this Amoga was a great fault finder and blasphemer. Bhojana dekhite chahe asite na pare, lati haite Bhattacharya achena durare. Amoga wanted to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat, but he was not allowed to enter. Indeed, the Bhattacharya guarded the threshold of his house with a stick in his hand. Tenho yadi prasada dite harva ananana amoga asi anadeki kaya angana. However, as soon as the Bhattacharya began distributing prasad and was a little inattentive, Amoga came in. Seeing the quantity of food, he began to blaspheme. Eyani kriptahaya dasa bharajana ekela sanyasikare ekita bhakshana. This much food is sufficient to satisfy 10 or 12 men. This sannyasi alone is eating so much. Suni eti bhattacharya ulati chaira dhana avadana teki amoga parayla. As soon as Amoga said this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya turned his eyes upon him. Seeing the Bhattacharya's attitude, Amoga immediately left. Bhattacharya lati lana marite daila araila moga kara karana paila. Bhattacharya ran after him to strike him with the stick, but Amoga fled so fast that Bhattacharya could not catch him. Tabe gali sapte dite Bhattacharya aila ninda suni mahaprabhu asita vadila. Bhattacharya then began to curse and call his son-in-law ill names. When the Bhattacharya returned, he saw that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was laughing to hear him criticize Amoga. Suni satira mate sire buke gata mare sati randi ha uka iha bhare bhare bhare. When Sati's mother, the Bhattacharya's wife, heard of this incident, she immediately began to strike her head and her chest, saying, "Oh, let Sati become a widow." Dunhara dhuka deki prabhu dunha prabhu diya dunhara e sate bhojana kara dushahana. Seeing the lamentation of both husband and wife, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to pacify them. According to their desire, he ate the prasad and was very satisfied. Achvan karana bata jiva mukha vasa tulasi manjari lavanga irasi rasa vasa. After Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finished eating, Bhattacharya washed his mouth and hands and legs and offered him flavored spices, tulsi manjari, cloves, and cardamom. Sarvange paila prapura malya sandhana dandavadhana bale sanangya asana. The Bhattacharya then placed a flower garland over Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and smeared his body with sandalwood pulp. After offering obeisances, the Bhattacharya submitted the following humble statement. Ninda karite dhoma ainu nizagare I brought you to my home just to have you blaspheme. This is a great offense. Please, excuse me. I beg your pardon. Prabhu kahe nindanahe sahaja kaila ihate kumarakiba aparada haila. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what Amoga said is correct. Therefore, it is not blasphemy. What is your offense? Eta Bali Mahaprabhu Chalila Bhavane Bhattacharya Tamigari Gedatam Esane. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left and returned to his residence. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also followed him. Prabhu Pade Pade Bahu Atmanindo Kaila Tame Santa Kare Prabhu Kare Pataira. Falling down at the Lord's lotus feet, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said many things in self-reproach. The Lord then pacified him and sent him back to his home. Gare asi patacharya sapira matasane apananindya kuchu palena vachane. After returning to his home, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya consulted with his wife, the mother of Sati. After personally condemning himself, he began to speak as follows. Chaitanya gosan hiranyanda sunilayaha hoite hare vada kaila hare papa prayashite. If the man who's blasphemed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is killed, his sinful action may be atoned. Purport by Sri Prabhupada. And the Hari Bhakti Vilas cites the following quotation from Skanda Purana concerning the blasphemy of a Vaishnava. Yohi Bhagavatam Lokam Upahasam Nirokama Haroti Tasyana Shanti Artha Dhamaya Shasuka Indam Kurvanti Ye Mudha Vaishnavanam Mahatmanam Patati Pachidi Sardam Maharo Vasamite Anti Nindanti Vai Krishi Vaishnavam Vedanantati Gurute Latino Harsham Arshane Patanai Sat. In this conversation between Markandeya and Bhagirath, it is said, my dear king, if one derides an exalted devotee, he loses the results of his pious activities, his opulence, his reputation, and his sons. Vaishnavas are all great souls. Whoever blasphemes them falls down to the hell known as Maharodha. He is also accompanied by his forefathers. Whoever kills or blasphemes a Vaishnava, and whoever is ever envious of a Vaishnava or angry with him, or whoever does not offer him obeisances or feel joy upon seeing a Vaishnava, certainly falls into a hellish condition. The Hari Bhakti Vilas 10.3.14 also gives the following quotation from the Dwarka Mahatma. Karapatra shabhavyante suti veryama sasanai yindam kurvantiye papa vaisnavana mahatmanam. In a conversation between Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, it is said, those sinful people who blaspheme Vaishnava, who are all great souls, are subjected very severely to the punishment offered by Yamaraj. In the Bhakti Sandarbha 3.13, there is a statement concerning the blaspheming of Lord Vishnu. Yenandanti hrishikesham tadbhaktam punyarupinam satajam marjitam punyam tesham nasyati nishitam te padjate mahagore kumbhipake bayanake. One who criticizes Lord Vishnu and his devotees loses all the benefits accrued in 100 pious births. Such a person rots in Kumbhipaka hell and is bitten by worms as long as the sun and moon exist. One should therefore not even see the face of a person who blasphemes Lord Vishnu and his devotees. Never try to associate with such persons. In the Bhakti Sandarbha 256, Jiva Goswami further quotes the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.74.40. Nindam Bhagavata Srimvam Tasparasya Janasyava Tato Nai Paiti Yatsohi Yatya Jasukitapskita. If one does not immediately leave upon hearing the Lord or his Lord's devotees blaspheme, he falls down from devotional service. Similarly, Lord Shiva's wife Sati states in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.4.17. Kano pindai hanai hadyara pavati te tamadya tarabhi adhikinam bizyakane tenyak prasyadu sikham sasitim kusu te divama suhati toko vishajat sabama. If one hears an irresponsible person blaspheme the master and controller of religion, he should block his ears and go away if unable to punish him. But if one is able to kill, then one should by force cut out that blasphemer's tongue and kill the offender, and after that, he should give up his own life. So when I was meditating on how this purport was woven with all the Sanskrit and different quotes, generally Srila Prabhupada writes something of his own and includes maybe one or two little quotes in a purport. This is practically all quotes, the whole thing. And that emphasizes the authority of the concept. Why is it so offensive? Why is it, what's the first offense in chanting the holy name? Yes, why? So, because one who's a Vaishnava is attempting in his or her own way to develop love, and you crush it with a criticism. You shred it. It's offensive to do that to someone. I don't care who it is, where they are, what they're trying to do. If they're trying to love and develop love in whatever way, to blaspheme that, to criticize it, is offensive. So then, on the other side, I started to think of how Srila Prabhupada in the beginning, New York and Bauer, who he's dealing with, how easy it would have been to find fault. But somehow or another, his vision, his motive, his acting with these boys enthused them to love Krishna. The spiritual master's purpose, even when instructed, he did it in such a way that was with love, and in such a way that they knew it was good for them. And people would actually kind of chuckle at their own foolishness when Srila Prabhupada would call them mudharks and rascals, because they knew they were. You're calling somebody a rascal and a mudhark, and they're laughing at your statement because of the way that it was presented. There's a beautiful section in the fourth canto we just read that one verse by Sati. What happened was that when Daksha and Sati started, Daksha and Lord Shiva had misunderstandings, Sati felt very hurt because of her father's criticizing her husband. And this is what she said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 4, Sati quits her body. Choice-born Daksha, a man like you can simply find fault in the quality of others. Lord Shiva, however, not only finds no faults with others' qualities, but if someone has a little good quality, he magnifies it greatly. Unfortunately, you have found fault with this such a great soul. Purport by Shiva Prabhupada. King Daksha is addressed here by his daughter Sati as Dvija, twice-born. Choice-born refers to the higher classes of men, namely Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. In other words, a Dvija is not an ordinary man, but one who has studied the Vedic literature from the spiritual master and can discriminate between good and bad. Therefore, it is supposed that he understands logic and philosophy. Sati, Daksha's daughter, put before him sound arguments. There are some highly qualified persons who accept only the good qualities of others. Just as a bee is always interested in the honey and the flower, and does not consider its thorns or color. Highly qualified persons for uncommon, except only the good qualities in others, not considering their bad qualities. Whereas the common man can judge what are good and what are bad qualities. Among the uncommon good souls, there are still gradations. And the best good soul is one who accepts an insignificant asset of a person and magnifies that good quality. Lord Shiva is also known as Ashutosh, which for sure refers to one who is satisfied very easily and who offers any person the highest level of benediction. So this is the vision. Krishna consciousness, the whole process of Vedic culture, is to refine our sentiments. It's one's sentiments that entangles him or her in material energy. It's our desire manifested through the body, through the modes of material nature, to come up with this vision of the world. And Krishna consciousness refines the impurities in that. Chaitra Darpana Margina. Now, I'm going to kind of change direction here a little bit and go to a science project. This is from Duke University. It's a professor of behavioral science studying the psychology of people. And what we're seeing here with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya is an elaborate expression of someone's love. Now, this man is a professor who's going to speak in the video. If you're at home or on the internet listening, there are some visuals in this YouTube video that might help make this more understandable. So if you want to look it up, it's called Experiments in Motivation -DND. There are so many motivational YouTube things that I had to put -DND just to get it to the top of the list so it's easy to find. So in this experiment, it's very simple tasks, but please pay attention between the different types of experiments and the results of those experiments in motivating someone to do work or act. And then we'll talk about that application in our society as Sangha of Krishna Bhaktis. So here's the video. You gotta go push the button. Okay. On one side, we have a person who is being critical, and on the other side, a person who is seeing the good qualities of someone. And what will be shown in these experiments is just how easy it is
and they build this
to enthuse someone.
And when they finished, we took it, we put it under the table, and we said, "Would you like to build another one? This time for 270.
Put it back to the beginning.
If they said yes, we gave them another one, and when they
how easy it is to enthuse someone, and how easy it is to
and so on, until at some point people said no more, it's not worth it for me. This was what I thought, started thinking about how do we experiment with this idea of the fruits of our labor. And to start with, we created a little experiment in which we gave people Legos. And we asked them to build Legos. So I started thinking about how do we experiment with this idea of the fruits of our labor. And to start with, we created a little experiment in which we gave people Legos. And we asked them to build Legos. And for some people, we gave them a Lego and we said, "Hey, would you like to build this Bionicle for $3? We'll pay you $3 for it." And people said yes, and they built this Lego. And when they finished, we took it, we put it under the table, and we said, "Would you like to build another one? This time for $270. If they said yes, we gave them another one. And when they finished, we asked them, "Do you want to build another one for $240, $210, and so on, until at some point people said, "No more. It's not worth it for me." This was what we called the meaningful condition. People build one Bionicle after another, After they finished every one of them, we put them under the table, and we told them that at the end of the experiment, we will take all these Bionicles, we will unassemble them, we will put them back in the boxes, and we will use it for the next participant. There was another condition. This other condition was inspired by David, my student. And this other condition we called the Sisyphic condition. And if you remember the story about Sisyphus, Sisyphus was punished by the gods to push the same rock up a hill. And when he almost got to the end, the rock will roll over and he would have to start again. And you can think about this as the essence of doing futile work. You can imagine that if he pushed the rock on different hills, at least he would have some sense of progress. Also, if you look at prison movies, sometimes the way that the guards torture the prisoners is to get them to dig a hole, and when the prisoners finish, they ask them to fill the hole back up and then dig again. There's something about this cyclical version of doing something over and over and over that seems to be particularly demotivating. So in the second condition of this experiment, that's exactly what we did. We asked people, would you like to build one Bionicle for $3? And if they said yes, they build it. And then we asked them, do you want to build another one for $270? And if they said yes, we gave them a new one. And as they were building it, we took apart the one that they just finished. And when they finished that, we said, would you like to build another one? This time for 30 cents less. And if they said yes, we gave them the one that they built and we broke. So this was an endless cycle of them building and we destroying in front of their eyes. Now what happens when you compare these two conditions? The first thing that happened was that people build many more Bionicles. They build 11 versus 7 in the meaningful condition versus the Sisyphus condition. And by the way, we should point out that this was not big meaning. People were not curing cancer or building bridges. People were building Bionicles for a few cents. And not only that, everybody knew that the Bionicles would be destroyed sooner, quite soon, right? So there was not a real opportunity for big meaning, but even the small meaning made a difference. Now, we had another version of this experiment. In this other version of the experiment, we didn't put people in this situation. We just described to them the situation, much I'm describing to you now, and we asked them to predict what the result would be. What happened? People predicted the right direction, but not the right magnitude. People who were just given the description of the experiment said that in the meaningful condition, people would probably build one more Bionicle. So people understand that meaning is important, they just don't understand the magnitude of the importance, the extent to which it's important. There was one other piece of data we looked at. If you think about it, there are some people who love Legos and some people who don't. And you would speculate that the people who love Lego will build more Legos even for less money, because after all, they get more internal joy from it. And the people who love Legos less will build less Legos because the enjoyment that they derive from it is lower. And that's actually what we found in a meaningful condition. There was a very nice correlation between love of Lego and the amount of Legos people built. What happened in the Sisyphic condition? In that condition, the correlation was zero. There was no relationship between the love of Lego and how much people built, which suggests to me that with this manipulation of breaking things in front of people's eyes, we basically crushed any joy that they could get out of this activity. We basically eliminated that. The next experiment was slightly different. We took a sheet of paper with random letters, and we asked people to find pairs of letters that were identical next to each other. That was the task. And people did the first sheet, and then we asked them if they want to do the next sheet for a little bit less money, and the next sheet for a little bit less money, and so on and so forth. And we had three conditions. In the first condition, people wrote a name on the sheet, found all the pairs of letters, gave it to the experimenter. The experimenter would look at it, scan it from top to bottom, say, uh-huh, and put it on the pile next to them. In the second condition, people did not write their name on it. The experiment looked at it, took the sheet of paper, did not look at it, did not scan it, and simply put it on a pile of pages, right? So you take a piece, you just put it on the side. In the third condition, the experimenter got the sheet of paper and directly put it into a shredder. What happened in those three conditions? In this plot, I'm showing you at what pay rates people stopped. So low numbers means that people worked harder, they worked for much longer. In the acknowledged condition, people worked all the way down to 15 cents. At 15 cents per page, they basically stopped this effort. In the shredder condition, it was twice as much, 30 cents per sheet. And this is basically the results we had before. You shred people's effort, output, you get them not to be as happy with what they're doing. But I should point, by the way, that in the shredder condition, people could have cheated. They could have done not so good work because they realized that people were just shredding it. So maybe the first sheet you would do a good work, but then you see nobody is really testing it, so you would do more and more and more. So in fact, in the shredder condition, people could have submitted more work and get more money and put less effort into it. But what about the ignored condition? Would the ignored condition be more like the acknowledge or more like the shredder or somewhere in the middle? It turns out it was almost like the shredder. Now, there's good news and bad news here. The bad news is that ignoring the performance of people is almost as bad as shredding their effort in front of their eyes. Ignoring gets you a whole way out there. The good news is that by simply looking at something that somebody has done, scanning it and say, that seems to be quite sufficient to dramatically improve people's motivations. So the good news is that adding motivation doesn't seem to be so difficult. The bad news is that eliminating motivation seems to be incredibly easy, and if we don't think about it carefully, we might overdo it.
Did you catch that last part? It's incredibly easy to motivate someone. Just recognize the first part of the experiment that had the name on it, and when the experimenter received it, he simply looked at it, scanned it for a minute, put it down, and said, yes, thank you. Simple exchange. Then the other person took it and shredded it. And the difference was twice the amount of output, twice the amount of action. So if we apply that to our own society and what we do with one another and how we motivate and enthuse one another to love Krishna, then it makes it a meaningful science experiment. Because we find that ignoring someone's endeavor is almost similar to shredding their enthusiasm. Not paying attention to somebody, not even recognizing what they're doing. Somebody just does a lot of work. But, oh Prabhu, we're not supposed to be attached to the fruits of our labor. Therefore, why should we praise or criticize one another? It doesn't really matter. You should just do your service. You should feel blessed that you can do your service. This is often the attitude. And when somebody acts in this way, it actually hurts another's endeavor. Right? And what to speak of criticizing. When somebody's endeavoring in a loving way, whatever they're doing, and constantly getting some kind of like negative energy toward them, it's blasphemous, it's offensive. And not recommended. And these pastimes of the Lord are there to help us understand these principles so that we can refine ourselves. I found myself in the last few weeks just after having read this and done it, really working to see the good in others, to see that their loving endeavor should be at least acknowledged. Nice going, good for you. How's it going? What is your project? Show interest in one another. And in this way, we breathe and grow something that's nourishing on a spiritual, positive, uplifting level. Whereas if we end up criticizing, the other day we were listening, you know how sometimes when you find a theme, different things start to connect to that theme. Listening to a lecture by Srila Prabhupada in the beginning of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the verse where he's describing the crow-like people and the swan-like devotees. Birds of a feather flock together. So the swan-like people, the Paramahamsa, can extract the milk from a combination of milk and water, just like Sati was describing, that an elevated soul sees the good in someone else and magnifies it. Whereas the crow looks for garbage and can always find fault. What's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita about fault? There's a fault. No, there's always some fault. You can always find fault. Every endeavor, 1848. Sahajam karma kanteya sadosham apina chedyat sarvarambha hidoshena durmena agnya ivavita. Every endeavor is covered by some sort of fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. You want to find a fault? If, as Lord Krishna says, every endeavor is covered by some sort of fault, then it won't be hard to find if you're looking for it. It's there. You look for it, you'll find it. You can find fault and you can cultivate that vision. Or you can cultivate the idea that how is this person trying to love Krishna? Now, what happens if somebody is doing something that's really against Siddhanta? They're really causing some problems in their attempt to create love for Krishna. Then we get into equivocal area. But nonetheless, it should be done in an uplifting way. The example that I found was that Vallabhacharya was a very well-to-do Brahmin in Prayag, Allahabad. And met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was instructing Rupa Goswami there. Some years later, he came to Jagannath Puri. And while he was there, he was very well learned, and he was proud of his learning. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu criticized him and instructed him. And one time he came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he said, "My dear Lord, I've written a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, which refutes Sridhar Swami's commentary. Mine is much better. Will you please listen to my explanation?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "No, I won't listen to it. One who doesn't follow the parampara is a blasphemer." And it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he felt like a duck in the society of swans. And Prabhupada gave a lecture on this. And that lecture was printed in a Back to Godhead magazine. In Bombay, in Gujarat, the main, just like in Bengal, the main sampradaya is the Gaudiya sampradaya. In Gujarat, the main sampradaya is the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. So many of the supporters of Islam were followers of Vallabhacharya. And Sumati Maharaji was one of them. And she wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada after having read the Back to Godhead magazine. And she said, "At first, I was very favorable to your movement and to help you. But now I see that you've become critical of the Acharya. And they're based on hearsay. You're calling Vallabhacharya was less intelligent. He was like a duck and a swan. I think that I would rather make anti-propaganda against Islam if this is so. And please publish your take this back and correct this idea." So Srila Prabhupada wrote back to Sumati Maharaji, a very authoritative letter, so perfect that he satisfied her and simultaneously explained to her why it was so that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vallabhacharya had such friction. And he gave the example, just like two lawyers, when they're in court, if they have opposing views, then they'll fight like anything and debate that topic. But as soon as they're finished and they go out of the court, then they're friendly. And indeed, it says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vallabhacharya's house, accepted prasadam, dealt with him in a very friendly manner. So apparently there's finer aspects to these sentiments, even when siddhanta or etiquette and different things are included. And we have to learn how to do that better, I think. So, any questions or comments?
Is
So I have a little more on that pastime, Prabhupada and Srimati Maharaj. At the same time, Haribol, I was working at the BTG offices in L.A. Prabhupada wrote to us. And he said, be careful what you print. In other words, even though that was an excerpt from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, you have to be more aware of the sensitivities of those who might read something like that. You know, we were aghast. We said, we're just from the CC. But Prabhupada wanted us to be careful and more aware of the kind of implications of things we printed. And there was another incident where we printed a transcript of Prabhupada's walk in Vrindavan. You know, probably the first time he went to India with the devotees, you know, and they went to Vrindavan. And he mentioned something about how the caste Goswamis, they may not be following, they'll come back as hogs, you know, in Vrindavan. Oh my God, that got back to the caste Goswamis. That was also a heavy letter Prabhupada wrote. He says, what are you doing, you know, like that. So Prabhupada was very sensitive, you know, and careful of how he dealt with all people. But I didn't know this part, that how he mollified Srimati Maharaji. That's very fascinating.
Yeah, nice. You can see, it's a perfect example of how we need to be educated in finer sentiments of exchange.
Sometimes I remember that the Bible thing, hate the sin, not the sinner. Mm. So there's a certain affection that one has for every part and parcel of Krishna. Prabhupada mentioned that. It says, as your love for Krishna increases, you love everything that's in relationship to Krishna. So there's a certain affection that's felt between people, even if they disagree on the part, the malice isn't deep. It's just on the surface. It's like, as you pointed out with the lawyer example, that especially if you criticize someone, the relationship is very important for it to work. Otherwise, it won't work. So, honor your parents so that your parents would be able to criticize, to correct you. And if you respected them, then you could take it. And if you didn't, then it would be a problem. And the same with teachers, so that Radha, all respects to others on the spiritual platform. And having that as a base of the relationship. And then even if you say something, the intelligence functions differently when it thinks.
Especially based on relationship. Nice point. Another one is Ramachandrapuri. He was a disciple of Madhavendrapuri, initiated by Madhavendrapuri. He was a godbrother of Visvarapuri, spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. And when Ramachandrapuri came to Jagannathpuri, his nature was to find fault. When he first came, it's described that he came to Puri, everybody offered him obeisances because he was a disciple of Madhavendrapuri. And Jagannanda Pandit went out and got some nice Jagannath prasadam, and he brought it back and he fed Ramachandrapuri. And then Ramachandrapuri finished eating and he said, oh, Jagannanda, no, you sit down and take what's left. And then he started to serve Jagannanda, and Jagannanda ate and then he was finished. And Ramachandrapuri said, no, come on, take more, just want just Jagannath prasad. So he filled him up and he ate even more. And then he went and said, yeah, yes, I've heard that the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will eat more than necessary. And now I see that it's true. So he was constantly finding fault. And in this way, one day, he walked into Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kutya, and there was some ants crawling here and there. And he looked and he said, oh my God, the sannyasi. Look, ants, there must have been sweetmeats on the floor here. You are sannyasi, you are such a bogey. And in this way, he criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told his servant, Govinda, that from this day forward, whatever we've been eating, when we go out and accept these invitations at various people's houses, now we will accept that. So he let everyone know in Puri that whenever you invite Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now instead of a nice pot of rice, you take only half. And everybody was feeling disturbed by this. Lack, it's the same thing. It's what happens when the motivation is shattered and crushed. This is what Ramachandrapuri's influence did. It Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lessened his... a person really likes to see... Well, part of love means to see the pleasure of the beloved. It's not a selfish act. It's a selfless act. There's actually pleasure. Seeing someone else enjoy. Seeing the beloved enjoy. So to feed someone, see them become satisfied and eat nicer, is pleasurable. So Paramahandapuri, who was also senior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, went one day to Lord Chaitanya's kutir and met with him. And he said, "Why have you come?" He said, "My dear Lord, my godbrother, Ramachandrapuri, is by nature a critic. Why you listen to him?" And he quoted this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. "The living entity who is subjected to birth and death attains immortality when he gives up material activities, dedicates his life to the..." He said that there are good and bad activities in this material world. And one shouldn't praise, neither should one criticize. And he quoted the Nyaya Shastra, which describes that in debate in philosophy, the former is more important and the latter is less important. So one should not criticize, but one may praise, one may encourage. And in this way, had that discussion with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we really do as a society need to learn this art.
Hare Krishna. Prabhupada instructed his disciples by saying, "You can prove your love to me by how you get along with each other." So I've always tried to understand that statement. And sometimes, if we're in a discussion with someone, or we have a point to make, or we see things going wrong, and we're very attached to our own idea of how it should be, and that can create a great deal of conflict. Sometimes, even if we're right, sometimes it's wiser to follow that instruction or request by Srila Prabhupada by just being wrong. Even if we're right, we're wrong. We can say that we're wrong just to save the relationship, because actually our whole thing is relationships with each other. If it's so important for us to be right, because according to Siddhanta or maybe other people are not understanding that I have the greatest realization, or I actually know and I can find the quote, and we see that it's creating so much conflict, maybe it's better to be wrong in that instance so that we can continue having a loving relationship with the devotees.
The analogy would be Srila Prabhupada saying, "Don't publish these kinds of things." It's similar. It's not that you don't believe it, or you change your beliefs, or you just don't have to put it in front of someone's face. Deep to deep?
Yeah,
doing the microphone, because it might be people listening.
Yeah, I think that's the more important point, but you don't necessarily have to, you know, say you're wrong if your conviction is you're right. You just, like, defer, or, "Oh, that's a nice perspective too. I think it's also part of the discussion that's relevant." You know, you don't have to, like, "Oh, Krishna's really not God. You're right." You know, you could maintain your convictions, right, and be honest and straightforward, yeah, and still make this person feel their relevant and have something to express and needs to be considered.
I remember way back, instruction to blaspheme a devotee is an offense. That the word blaspheme seems somewhat severe. And somewhere in a purport, when Prabhupada, I can't remember where, explaining the 10 offenses, he used the word deride, to deride a devotee. Mm. And at that time, I didn't know what it meant. I looked it up, and it belittle. So even to just slightly, like say conversing with somebody about somebody else, if you say something that will belittle them, that other person, in the eyes of this person you're talking to, just belittle, a little bit, that's blasphemy. Major.
Thank you. One more?
I was thinking also, Prabhupada, well, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those are they're dear to him in the 12th chapter. Mm. And I think it's even the first one, the 12th, 13th, 14th verse, he says, he was a kind friend to everyone.
Well, that's a whole other aspect of it. Samasa, Vishu, Bhuteshu, seeing the polarity, seeing everyone as part and parcel of Krishna.
And even in the purport, he says he doesn't become his enemy's enemy. He thinks that he uses it for type of a humility that Krishna is doing this, helping me see these things about myself. So he uses it as an introspective opportunity.
We're studying Antilila in our online class now, and one of the themes that's so prominent in Antilila of Chaitanya Charitamrita is humility. Rupa Sanatana Goswami, the sores he got on his body, humility he expressed. Raghunath Das Goswami, coming from a multi-millionaire family to the point where he's eating leftover rice and cleaning it. So many different persons. Haridas Thakur, humility is so pleasing to the Lord. But we have...
One other little point. If you take it to like the metaphysical, drop it into more subtle points, that it's structured this way because it mentions all the reactions that take place. You lose your reputation, your all your pious activities. So it's structured all-pervadingly that this is part of the laws of nature, too.
All glories to Chaitanya Charitamrita, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.